Now, I'm a proper nerd, but as our business grows, I hate having multiple apps to track different things, having to remember all these logins for everything. And from what we're learning from our listeners, this is a big problem that's really affecting productivity.
Let's be honest, shall we? Mars Tech is just far too complicated. My brain isn't built for it. And most tasks take twice as long because before you can even start, you've got to remember which app has the stuff you need. Was it Google Docs? Did we store it in Asana? Do we even still use Basecamp?
HubSpot has got a great platform that can really help you if you feel the same as us. There's no more hours wasted on time-consuming tasks. There's no more chasing down like things like prospect information. And no more one system for this and one system for that.
Yep, if you and your teams are busy growing your business, then a HubSpot customer platform can help you find leads, reach prospects, and deliver the insights you need to convert them into customers all in one place. Oh, and the HubSpot AI can literally do more of your work for you, so you can focus more on scaling your business.
Visit HubSpot.com to learn how HubSpot's customer platform can help you grow your business.
Yeah, honestly, I feel a lot of compassion and a lot of love for you know, colleagues and friends out there who are having to do that hard work and sometimes are being painted with a bad brush, because what they're doing is that they're doing the things that need to be done, and that is sometimes a really difficult pill for people to swallow.
Hello and welcome to the Truth, Lies and Work podcast, brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. My name is Leanne, I'm a business psychologist.
My name is Al, I'm a business owner.
And we are here to help you simplify the science, the psychology of work.
If this is your first time listening to us for a couple of weeks, you might have noticed that we've changed our name to Truth, Lies and Work, not Truth, Lies and Workplace Culture. We're still talking about workplace culture, just thought it'd be a bit snappier, a little bit easier to remember, and potentially looks better on our thumbnail as well. We're also, to celebrate that, we've gone to two episodes a week. This is Thursday episode where we have the interviews. You're used to this one. There's another cheeky Tuesday one just popping up where we have a workplace surgery, where Leanne will put questions to Leanne, and also we have a news roundup and all other kind of fun things. Probably a quiz at some point, I would have thought, Leanne. So as I say, today, Thursdays are still all about having amazing guests.
Let me tell you about today's amazing guest, Ben Branson Gately. Ben is the co-founder and CEO of Charlie HR, the HR software for small businesses. While dyslexia made his time at school tough, he persevered and graduated from St. George's University of London with a BSc in biomedical science. It was around this time that he met his co-founder, Rob O'Donovan, and together they built an incredibly successful social media agency called Born Social. But about 8 years ago, they saw a gap in the market for an HR solution that was built specifically for smaller businesses. So like every entrepreneur that's ever walked the earth, they decided to build it. Today, Charlie HR is now one of the leading HR platforms in the UK, with over 4,000 companies using it to manage their teams.
What I loved about interviewing Ben was that he genuinely took the time to think about the questions I asked and how he was going to respond. I think I know someone else who's a bit like that, my co-host Leanne. So if you're watching this on YouTube and you see a fair number of jump cuts and whatever, it's not me cutting him out. It's just me removing the moments where Ben genuinely was like, let me think about that.
Let's go and meet Ben Branson Gately, co-founder of Charlie HR.
I'm CEO and co-founder of Charlie HR, and we're all about supporting small businesses with everything that relates to HR within their company. Been doing that for about 7-8 years. We have a core software product that supports nearly 4,000 small businesses, micro businesses in the UK. I think I'm known for hiring great people and building great teams. That's kind of really why I do what I do. It's because of the people that we get to work with.
Ben and his co-founder spotted a gap in the market. And knowing entrepreneurs as I do, I'm sure this wasn't the first idea they discussed over a coffee or a Friday night beer. But what made building an HR platform so compelling? Well, it came down to how passionate Ben is about small businesses.
You know, every business in the UK, every business in the world that is employing people needs some type of software to automate some of the processes that relate to these tasks. So it is a massive industry. There are companies big and small that span it. Our take was this. Often in these situations, it's the really small companies that get ignored. It's the people that have got 6, 7, 8, 9 employees. And there's not a lot of great software out for them to use, because a lot of these providers build software for, you know, companies that have got 500, 1,000, 2,000, 10,000 people, because that's where the money is, right? But it's those small companies, those really small companies that are often ignored. But that is where all the innovation, that is where all new ideas, that is where every great invention or problem that we need solved for the coming 10, 20 years is going to start. And so we're really passionate about small businesses. You know, their success rate is very low, right? If I had 100 small businesses today, in 10 years' time, only 30 of them would still be around. So we just want to kind of make that survival process as easy as possible. And so the bit that we take responsibility for is the people bit, is the HR component. And we focus on that market, yeah, because we believe in small businesses. We believe in the power of small businesses and the change that they can create in the world. The core problem that we're solving for is that in a company that is, let's say, 30 people, you normally won't have anyone that is an HR professional. You wouldn't have really a head of people. You wouldn't have a head of HR manager. It's unlikely, right? What you typically have is a leader, a business owner, who is having to deal with HR as part of what they do on a daily basis, right? It's like, if you hire someone, you've got to do HR, right? If you've got one person on your team, you've got to have some eyes on what it means to do HR in a business. They've been lumped with it. It's not what they show up to work to necessarily do, but they've got to handle it. And so we're your first hire. We're the first step that you take to improve your systems, your processes, the way you do things from an HR capacity within your business before you decide to hire a full-time person. And so you start with our software. We make sure that you collect all the information you need to collect about your employees. We make sure that you're starting to track people's time off and their sick leave and their compassionate leave. We make sure you've got all the right documentation and policies. If you need to speak to an expert, you can speak to one of our team. That's the problem that we're solving for, is that there's a gap between having to be responsible for HR in the company and actually hiring someone full-time to do that, and we fill that gap. But yeah, it's something that we sort of talk about where we see ourselves fitting in within the HR journey. We're your first system, we're your first hire, we're the first step that you take as a small business where you're like, I've got to do something about my HR. You come to us. As you progress and evolve, you know, as your company grows, we're probably then not going to be right for you. But that's the magic of what we do, which is just focusing on one very particular use case, one very particular customer. You know, most of our companies are less than 100 people. And we really thrive within that demographic.
Now, TikTok and YouTube Shorts is all full of posts about HR. And it seems that HR are the baddies in the workplace. Ben puts forward a pretty convincing argument that this is not the case. Yes, they have to make difficult decisions, but they're often necessary decisions to ensure the business can continue to grow.
We're not there to police work, for sure. There is a relationship between you and the company. They're investing in you. And what they're expecting is that that investment in you is going to create an outcome which is greater than what the investment is. We've always had incredibly strong cultures in our organizations. We've always prioritized our people in a huge way. And I actually don't think that these two ideas are completely separate. I think they can live harmoniously together. I think and believe that you can build a culture that supports the individuals in the building, that prioritizes mental health, that is open and transparent and supportive of all different types of people, but is also focused on being a commercial, highly commercial organization. That's what companies do. And I think through some of these good times where money was cheap, free and easy, and focusing on profitability, maybe it wasn't that important. We forgot a bit about that. And we as company owners and leaders, we did a disservice to our teams, which is we let them, in some cases, believe that work was about the perks and the benefits and all this other stuff. And it's not. Like, that is the dusting. It's the sugar on top of the pie. But it's not the filling. The filling is the relationship of you got some skills, Al, that I think I can use to the betterment of our organization commercially. And it's an investment. I'm expecting more out the other side than I'm going to put in. And I think the reason why that's starting to come to the fore, and I've had lots of conversations about this, but there was a recent blog by a very good friend of mine, Jessica, who I think captured this really, really nicely, which is that in these hard moments where we are now, where we're having to put a bigger focus on profit, a bigger focus on performance, there's definitely a bit of a reckoning happening, right? And people are like, oh, this is like really difficult and quite gnarly. And like, that's a really important conversation to have. It's a really important conversation. And I think sometimes, unfortunately, HR are the people having to have that conversation and say, yeah, we haven't got the money to spend on higher salaries or, you know, better benefits because times are tough. And so I think that's why sometimes people see HR as the bad person or the bad cop in the scenario. It's because HR are doing the redundancies. Yeah, redundancies are a part of like what happens when markets go up and then markets come down. There's a reckoning. There's a reevaluation. There is evolution that has to happen with the system. And sometimes I think HR are the people that happen to do that. And so, yeah, honestly, I feel a lot of compassion and a lot of love for, you know, colleagues and friends out there who are having to do that hard work and sometimes are being painted with a bad brush, because what they're doing is that they're doing the things that need to be done. And that is sometimes a really difficult pill for people to swallow.
Building a business relies on making hundreds of decisions, probably each day. I was interested in how Ben approached these decisions, especially as the company and his team grew.
It's good if people disagree with your decisions. In fact, if everyone is happy with the decision that you've made a bad decision. In fact, you haven't made a decision at all. You know, if your decision is without any compromise, it's not a decision. A good example might be you come to me and you say, I really want to manage people. Oh, that's great. I love that. You've really got aspirations to manage people in your career growth journey. So I'm like, we should give Al a direct report. We should have someone on the team report into Al. It's great. Super good for you. Probably quite good for that other person as well, right? Because they've got some of their energy that wants to manage them. But we've just added an extra layer, an extra person in our leadership structure. We've complicated things. We've slowed things down. We've orientated our organizational model around an individual rather than around what's best for the company. It's a mistake I made a bunch of times in my career, which is thinking individual first rather than thinking company first. If you're at the top and you're not making calls that are uncomfortable, you're not making calls, basically. I'm very fortunate that I've only ever worked for myself. You know, me and my business partner started working together when we were 16, 17 years later. You know, we built two super strong organizations, but it's taken also that time to really get used to, you know, what does it mean to be a great leader? What does it mean to be a great executive, right? And you have to get some stuff wrong in terms of going through that process. So yeah, I love to be right, but I prefer to be wrong. I know that I'm like learning more from that experience than I am from the decisions that I get right.
Let's get to the good stuff, culture. HR is often left to execute, as Al said, the bad and the ugly of people and culture decisions. Things like redundancies, grievance investigations, disciplinaries. But great HR leaders also operate as business partners, working hand in hand with leaders to shape and build a great culture in which people and performance thrives. But the biggest mistake I see is leadership defining a culture with no employee consultation and then expecting everyone to fall into line with it. Culture is a collective process and it evolves.
If someone says, oh, the culture at my company is great, often the way that that's been communicated is it's positive. It's like I get great benefits, I get great perks. A company's culture is the untouchable, uncontrollable combination of the interpersonal relationships of everyone in that team and or organization. And it's constantly in flux. And as a business owner, what you can do is like try and push it in directions, but you can't control it. And, you know, if you're having a bad week, the culture changes. If you hire someone, the culture changes. If you fire someone, the culture changes. If you promote someone, the culture changes. The culture changes as the seasons evolve. So it's constantly in flux. And yeah, what we want to try and do is like have a direction that we're trying to point it towards. You know, almost I see it as a boat with sails. We're trying to point it in a direction, but ultimately like a sailing boat is kind of at the beck and call of what the winds are doing. And there is only so much control that we can have. I've gone on this huge journey as it comes with my views on culture. You know, you mentioned we started two businesses. Our first was an agency. We ran that for 5 years and Charlie for 7 after that. I've always been very people focused, but I've made a lot of mistakes when it comes to culture. And often those mistakes have been early on in my career, failing to understand what culture the business needed. So this is how I believe every single founder, every single business owner should think about culture, is they should start with what the business is trying to do, where we're trying to get, right? What are our aims for the next couple of years? What culture do we need? If you are Goldman Sachs, that gives you your answer. If you are Monzo, that gives you your answer. If you're Charlie HR, that gives you your answer. What is the culture that we need? And then how do we think about the group of people that are going to enable that culture and the policies and the processes and the ways of working that are going to support that? Rather than what culture do our people, you know, what culture do we want? Or what would be a nice culture to have? What would be a good culture to have? What would be a culture that we can write loads of fun content and blogs about? Culture should be a strategic tool to help us achieve things. And so it should start with where we're trying to go, what are we trying to do? And so, our culture is very different this year than it was a couple of years ago, because where we are as a business has changed. We've matured. We're profitable. We're more focused on the core value of what we're trying to do. And so because of that, we don't celebrate things as much as we used to, you know. We celebrate the things that are right, the things that are correct, the things that are strategically relevant. We have a higher bar, right? We probably don't dish out as many rewards and things like that as maybe we did 2 or 3 years ago. We're more considered. We're more focused. There's less stuff that happens that is extraneous or outside the core of what we're trying to solve for, the core of what we're trying to achieve. And as these things evolve, the people that want to be part of that and don't want to be part of that shifts and evolves, right? And like that's the beautiful thing about it. If you think about it top down, people will select themselves in and they'll select themselves out. Rather than if you think what's the right culture for this group of people, you'll often build the wrong culture for what the business is trying to do. But if you think about what's the business trying to do, what's the culture we need for that, then you'll build a culture that will select in and select out the people that are right.
What are the signs that a great culture is actually evolving?
So, yeah, I would say the first thing is stepping back. Is it enabling your people to be successful? Can you see evidence of that? Is the end output of your team or your organization, is it what you want it to be? If those things line up, then I think you're moving it in the right direction. But yeah, you should very easily be able to see the type of organization you're building and how that's helping your people to be better. You know, like firmly believe your job as a leader is to make the people that you work with as good as you can make them. Do that, you're going to have a successful business. Yeah, it's your culture enabling that. Right. That is what our job is as a CEO. It is to create an organization and enable all the facets of it, you know, enhance every component that sits within it. And the way your company operates, the way people work, all of that stuff should be enabling those things. Is it getting in the way? Is it frustrating? Is it causing angst? Is it causing anger? Or is it making things smooth, allowing people to be really effective, allowing people to focus and do great work? I'm less interested in engagement and much more interested than in sort of what's the quality of the stuff that's coming out the other end.
It's always difficult to avoid the temptation to compare your culture to the culture of other organisations. But Ben recommends that you really shouldn't.
I always think about that phrase, which is that comparison is the thief of joy. And in the company building world, in the technology world, it's rife. You know, there is so much comparison. There's so much. Who's raised what money? You know, who's on what list? Like, who's on what blog post? I don't think it makes you a better business to be focused on that stuff. So there have been some great books that have inspired my thinking, but I also really believe that what is right for one business is not necessarily right for another. So you've got to go your own route. You've got to do what's right for you. You know, I fundamentally believe that every leader is only capable of being a version of a leader that is true to them. Right, it's no use looking at Mark Zuckerberg and going, I'd love to be like Mark Zuckerberg. It's like, well, you ain't. You're not Mark Zuckerberg, so you're not gonna be like him. It's much better to connect with who you and you know, what is it that can make you successful? What is it that can make you great? And be that version. I got super distracted in my career, tried to be different versions of different people at various points. You know, like, before I was the CEO, I was the COO. And when I took over as CEO, the first mistake that I made was trying to be like the old CEO, because that's someone that I like, you know, my business partner, someone that I like massively look up to, someone that I hugely respect. And I thought, okay, I need to be like him. That's the only CEO I've ever known. Well, I'm never going to be like him, because I'm not him. I haven't got his skills. I haven't got the things that he can do. But I have all these other skills and things that I can do. So I should focus on those, you know, for that reason that I have no social, you know, I'm not on social media. I have some accounts, none of those apps on my phone. I never log in. You'll occasionally find me rolling through the odd YouTube video. I look at LinkedIn occasionally. But I think a lot of those things, honestly, make people feel worse than they make people feel better. Because we look at those things and we think, oh, I'm not that. I haven't got that award or that accolade or that many followers or that many this. And I know that's ironic coming from someone that previously founded a social media business. But yeah, so I try and as much as possible stay in my lane, focus on the people around me, focus on the team that we've got, and celebrate the wins that we've created within our context. Because, yeah, I think being happy every day is kind of a pretty important thing to me. You know, I think when we talk about success, if I can enjoy my life, that's a lot of success. Because I know a lot of very quote-unquote successful people who are pretty fucking unhappy.
What part do things like engagement surveys play in developing a great culture? Do you drop a survey and then magically everything is fixed?
You know, we do an engagement survey. It's a data point. It's an indicator. I mean, you asked, is that a relevant tool? Yes, it's a relevant tool. Is it the top of your pyramid? No. You know, there's lots of metrics that you can track. Revenue is the top of the pyramid because ultimately that's what we're here to do. I don't want to sort of sugarcoat it, but we're a commercial business. We have shareholders, right? Our job is to grow revenue. I think people don't like talking about money because it's like icky. And it makes us feel like we're not good people. All these things are a spectrum, right? So we're probably at one side and Goldman Sachs are probably at the other side. But yeah, like, I know that we're building an impactful business if we're making more revenue, because it means we're supporting more companies and they're choosing to spend more money on our solutions and products. That's how I measure impact. If we're not growing it, it means we're getting worse at trying to solve the problems that we're trying to solve for our customers. So that's what I look at every day. That's what we track. That's what we think about. And everything cascades up into that. And so it's very possible that we could be doing a really good job there and have everyone miserable and hating their life. And so, yeah, that's why these other indicators allow you to triangulate yourself. What's the engagement like? Okay, cool. You know, like, what's the vibe? Go sit in the office. How do people feel? As humans, we want simple answers, right? We want to know, there's one number. Look at that one number. If you're doing that thing, you're doing a good job at X, Y, and Z. It's never that simple, right? It's never that simple. The answer is always not one thing. It's normally like at least 10 to 50 things. And that's how I try and think about our version of success. Is I'm sort of looking at a constellation of stars, and where do I feel like we are within that? You know, every one of those numbers and data points tells you something that you can use to, you know, change the way you're doing business. But yeah, I think it's really important to be very, very clear about what the top outcome the organization is moving for. And I, by the way, I'm not necessarily saying that I'm a proponent for every company needs to be money making, because absolutely you could be a charity and our top number is like donations received or donations deployed. But like, let's be really clear about what the game is. Let's not muddy the water. Let's not make things weird or opaque. Let's be crystal, because I think the sooner that you do that, the better it is for everyone that is involved.
In every story, there are obstacles, and most successful people face significant obstacles on their way to success. As we mentioned earlier, Ben has dyslexia, but he sees that as a superpower.
I'm a pretty dyslexic person. So school wasn't massively easy for me, right? Because rote learning, the way our education system is currently set up, is like, it's just bad news for me, right? Not going to do well. I'm grateful for it because it's made me be me, and I love me. Yeah. And I love this little sort of journey that I've been on. And so, yeah, I'm definitely a product of all of that stuff, as you all are, right? That's the beauty of life, is that you realize there's very little that you can do, because all these things happened to us when we were like kids and children and toddlers in some instances. Can't go back and change those things. All we can do is work out, how do we live with them? How do we work with them? How do we accept them and move forward? What I could bring was effort. And so, you know, ultimately, like, that's what I've sort of built my career on, is just bringing that consistent effort, because I know that's where I can succeed. I'm not going to be the smartest person in the room. In fact, most days I'm like one of the dumbest people in the room. I work with a lot of people that are a lot smarter than me. I'm very happy hiring people that are a lot smarter than me. But yeah, what I bring is that consistent effort, and I can bring those people together. I can get them to trust me. I can point them in the right direction. And so, yeah, I just kind of worked out where I was going to be successful, because there are a lot of professions in life that I wouldn't have been able to be successful at, because the way they're set up and the way they're designed. I wanted to be a doctor, but I didn't get the grades, right? Because I couldn't consume that amount of information. But this I can do, because I can just show up every single day and just put in that high level of effort that's required and be consistent for the people I work with, for our team, for our investors, for our customers. I've been going basically, yeah, we can call it 15 years since university without a break. Obviously, I have holidays, I had a sabbatical for a month in there, but like, I've not had any career breaks. I went from one company straight into the other. And like, I've definitely had low patches and high patches, but I'm just one foot in front of the other. That's it. Take a step.
Coming up after the break, more from Ben. A quick podcast recommendation for you. If you haven't listened to Content is Profit with the amazing Louise and Fonzie Camacho recently, then you're missing out on great guests, crazy hosts, and the secret behind something they call the frictionless sale. If you're anything like me, you're not really going to get on with those sales, bro, woof kind of podcasts. And, you know, If that's the case, then these guys are a refreshing change for you.
One of the episodes I listened to recently was How to Outsmart Google in 2024. If you publish anything on the interwebs, then you know you need to rank on Google. Their guest, Jason Barnard, talks you through all the secrets you need to know to outsmart Google this year. Listen to Content It's Profit wherever you get your podcasts.
Regular listeners will know that Al is indeed a super nerd when it comes to IT, code and software. And I'm, well, being honest, I'm probably not clever enough to get it. So building a platform like Charlie HR feels completely unattainable to me. Ben has some amazing advice if you feel the same as I do. And it's not what you might think.
We've always had technical people in the business. None of the co-founders were technical. So yeah, we have a head of engineering today. He's been with us, a long time. We have a great engineering team that's about sort of 10, 12 people. Software is very easy to build these days, right? It's never been easier to teach yourself to code. There are lots of out-of-the-box tools that you can use now, like low-code tools to build products, websites. Yeah, the barriers to entry, the costs of building software have never been lower. I think one of our reflections is that building the product is not the hard part. There's lots of people that build great softwares, great products, but never build great businesses. And there's a gap there. And the gap is, can you match the problem that your product solves to a specific customer niche that needs that problem solving? And more importantly, do you know how to get those people to use your product? There are amazing products that I see on a weekly and monthly basis that have no customers. They're great products. And I would say most of the time, they're better products than ours. They're like Swisher. Their code's cleaner. They're faster. They're easier to use, maybe. There's more detail and finesse in some of the ways they've thought about the product design, but they haven't done the bit in the middle. And yeah, 8 years of building a software company, that's probably one of my biggest reflections, which is that people get so obsessed with the fun stuff, the stuff that's flashy and interesting and cool and trendy. Are we using this great new language or this amazing framework? None of that matters if you can't find a customer base and get them to use it. And so, yeah, I think we're seeing a bit of resurgence, a bit of a change in the winds in like product and software development across the world. We've been a bit highfalutin. We've been a bit sort of like in our own heads, in our minds, thinking that we're these great conquerors of technology, that we can build all these amazing things. And if we build it, they will come. No. Like, if you build it, you have to work out how to get people there. And that's the really, really difficult part. I don't think there's really anything complex in what we built. It's a glorified spreadsheet. But the part that's most important is like understanding how we can get customers to use the product.
Psychologists are fascinated with the minds and personalities of entrepreneurs, and I am no exception. We spoke to Ryan Sherman, Chief Science Officer at Hogan, a personality assessment provider, way back in episode 26. He explained that entrepreneurs and organized criminals share a huge amount of personality traits. One of those is determination, or being able to stick at something for a long time, even when the going gets tough.
I don't think I'm driven in the sense that there are so many people around me, and my co-founder is a great example of this, who are way more ambitious than I am. What I am is consistent. I'm really, really, really good at just getting up every day and maintaining like a high level of energy. Not the highest, but a high level, being consistent and continuing to push forward. In my sporting life, I like really long runs, which is not about how fast you go or anything like that, or where do you place? It's just about completing it. And a lot of the time, it's about the enjoyment of the journey. And philosophically, that's kind of how I think a lot about life is, make sure you take in the views on your way up, because it might be cloudy when you get to the top. And so kind of what I pride myself on and what I try and focus on is just consistency, and doing a good job every day, enjoying every day, taking in those moments, making sure to reflect.
So there is the story of Charlie HR and its founder, Ben. and a whole bonus heap of advice around culture, which is added absolutely free of charge.
Before we go, let's get another little nugget of wisdom from Ben. We asked Ben at what point leaders need help with HR. His answer is gloriously simple.
I think I would start with just like disorganization, right? If you don't know where you've stored your team's passport details, if you don't know where to go and find someone's start date, and if you've no idea how many holiday days someone's taken, then you need Charlie.
If this does sound like you, then here's what you need to do.
They should just head to charliehr.com. We've got an amazing blog up there. We've got an amazing newsletter you can sign up for that comes out weekly with great insights and content. Loads of helpful guides. We've got loads of free stuff. You can also sign up to our product for a free 7-day trial. If you're less than 5 people, so a really small company, you can have the whole product for £5 a month. So, you know, that's almost the price of a pint or less than the price of a pint in London these days. So we try and make it as easy as possible for people to get on the ladder.
If you like this episode, go find us on LinkedIn, search for Truth, Lies and Work, and tell us all about it. Perhaps even tag in Ben and say how much you enjoyed listening to him. And if you have a question that Leanne can answer on our Tuesday Workplace Surgery, then you'll find our email in the show notes. Look, let you into a bit of a secret, we've just hit, and we don't really publish these things, we've just hit our 500,000 downloads since we've started, which is obviously incredible. It means a lot of people are enjoying our stuff. Hopefully you will too. So if you do, then look, we'll continue to try and bring you the very best guests, the very best content around work and workplace culture. In return, click subscribe and please just give us a review. Give us like, if you only got a second, give us rating. If you've actually got a few seconds just to write a review, it makes such a difference. And we're not begging, we're just gently encouraging.
Thank you to everyone that has listened and helped us hit that really cool milestone. We will be back next Tuesday with This Week in Work. We'll be talking about the news, things that have been going on, some highlights from maybe other shows. We shared another highlight from a different podcast last week. And of course, we will answer your questions. So do get in touch. Until then.
Bye-bye.
Bye. The temptation.
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 All different types of what? Do all that again, Al. I'm feeling you're taking the piss out of me, but I can't work out how or why.
And you're going to start limiting you to 3 so's and 2 amazings per episode. What part do... That's very high-pitched.